He's involved in intelligence issues, but as far as you're concerned, and what's most important, he is the chairman of the House Committee on Agriculture. Please welcome the Honorable Mike Conaway. Thanks, sir. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you. And I thought Pat Roberts was a hard act to follow. I don't know if he mentioned this or not, but I'm a CPA, and just by definition, we are not funny. So, no, I appreciate the introduction. The Price Waterhouse thing, when I was coming out of college, I had interviewed with all the big eight at that point in time, and I had offers from all of them, and my mom said, well, you have to go to work for Price Waterhouse. Well, she didn't know big eight firms from Sikkim. I mean, she had no clue who these people were. I said, well, why don't you pick Price Waterhouse? She said, because I want you on that stage with the Academy Awards, handing out those envelopes. I was like, well, okay, well, that's probably not going to happen. But it is great to be with you this morning. Again, like I just said, I'm the CPA, and we're not funny. All right, let's try that again. And I know we have to have the lights like this, but I really don't like talking to just the first row down here. I'd rather talk to all of you, but I can't see you by design, I guess, to keep me from getting terrified of what you're going to throw. I remember George Bush, when he was in Iraq, got those two shoes thrown at him. He could see those coming because the lights were up. So if you've got something to throw, oh, thank you. All right, that's better. If you've got something to throw, I'd like to see it coming just to have a chance to dodge it. It is great to be with you. I'm going to run through some points, and again, thank you for having me here this morning. Sonny Perdue is going to get confirmed as our next Secretary of Agriculture. He would normally be here in this slot. Since he wasn't, I begged, borrowed, and pleaded my way onto this stage just to be able to talk to you this morning. But he'll get confirmed. I don't know him personally other than just since he was nominated. I've had two or three conversations with him. I think he's going to do a good job. He's got a good background for the job. He's a veterinarian by profession, and he and his brother-in-law were in the grain merchanting business for a long, long time. And so he's been a governor of an ag state where agriculture is really popular, is really important. I talked to two guys who have worked with him, who are in the current serve with me right now, Austin Scott and Doug Collins. They were both state senators when Sonny was governor. They say they can be hard-headed, but makes his mind up, but he'll listen to you, he'll work with you. And so I think he'll be a guy who'll do a good job with respect to the Secretary of Agriculture. And the sooner we can get him in, the better. And I think that's in that process is going forward. We've heard President Trump. We didn't say much about it Tuesday night, but he did a great job Tuesday night, just from my personal perspective. It's not much about ag Tuesday night, but he has said over more than once that he wants the farm bill done on time. He wants it to be a strong farm bill. He understands the importance of production agriculture to the economy, to jobs, and everything else that's going on. And so I think we've got a good ally and a good advocate in the White House as well. I'm committed, driven, quite frankly, to get the farm bill done on time. It hasn't been renewed in 16 years on time. So if you want the drama associated with short-term extensions or expirations and permanent law, all that drama that we normally get on the farm bill, then I need you to go to a different theater because we're going to work real hard not to let that happen. There's a certain elegance to getting it done on time. The certainty of having that next five-year look for obviously for you and the decisions you're making, your bankers and creditors and others. Let's just get this thing done on time. Colin Peterson and I are committed to making it happen. We'll have to have your help to get the Senate to move forward. But while we're doing that, I've got a couple of priorities, and then I'll work through the getting this done project. First off, I am going to work really hard at being production agriculture's best friend and advocate, period. I'm also going to ensure that our committee is a spokesman across every issue that touches your quiet lives. Whether it's foreign policy that we actually have a piece of or anything else that's out there, our committee will weigh in on anything and everything that has an impact on you on your behalf to make that happen. The reason we need a farm bill is going to be a little easier to explain in 18 than it was in 14. Those of you who remember the good old halcyon days of 13 and 14 when you were actually making money. And we were trying to do a farm bill, trying to put a safety net in place. There were folks who were misguidedly asking, now, why do you need a safety net? Things are great, production and agriculture. Prices will never go down again. Why do you need that safety net? Well, guess what? Prices went down again. And so the 18 backdrop of the wreck that you're trying to live through right now will help us explain to folks who don't understand it why we do, in fact, need this this safety net. There's been some conversation about, and maybe some misunderstanding of what I've said about the SNAP program and the new strategy and the rest of the Farm Bill. We're going to get them both done on time. And if the path forward makes it easier to get them done together, we'll do them together. If it's easier to get them done separately, we'll get them done separately. But I want to get them both done. Now, the only people I've talked to or heard about who want to separate the Farm Bill from the SNAP program are those who want to kill the farm program. I am spectacularly opposed to that. So we're going to get this done. That's just process. That is no, that's not policy. That's just a process. And we're going to make this process work to get this thing done and get it done on time. We've got a great story to tell. The 14th Farm Bill was supposed to have spent $23 billion less than the 08 version. We missed that mark, but we missed it by four. We're spending $100 billion less on the Farm Bill than we thought we were going to spend. Now, 92 of that's in SNAP, but even our income support programs are projected to come in under the mark in the face of this spectacular drop in farm income that you've experienced over the last 4 years. So we're going to get it done. The question is how? Well, obviously, production agriculture folks will be at the table, and I need you shoulder to shoulder. We'll have some arm wrestling to go on among our families, regionally, crops, whatever it might be. We'll get that done. And then I got all those guys, just like they've done in the past, going to go shoulder to shoulder with me and the rest of the folks to get it done. Obviously, the SNAP folks are going to want to be at the table as well to make this happen. Now, we have done a two-year review of the SNAP program, 16 hearings. We held our 17th one just at the start of this hearing, the start of this session, Congress. We're going to harvest that good work. We put out a white paper in December to show you where we're going. So we're going to have some meaningful reforms to SNAP program that are going to be there. But those two folks are normally the advocates. Well, I'm going to argue that there's a broader group out there that should be at the table, should be demanding that we get this done. And you know who that group is? That's the folks who eat every day. American consumer gets a deal when they go to the grocery store or the restaurant. They don't know it. They love getting deals. We all like getting deals. But they don't know it. And they don't know why. So we've got to figure out how to get them convinced that the most abundant and safest and affordable food and fiber supply is the real reason why we need this Farm Bill, get it done, and to get it done on time. So how we get that done, I talked to some of the leadership this morning of the four commodity groups that are here. They've got some plans to move forward and try to make that happen. I'm going to deputize everybody in here. You're now a part of that process of convincing consumers that they have to that they need to support this this Farm Bill. As we go through this, my whole the family that I'm going to keep in my mind as to why we need to get this done is this one. Let me give you before I tell you that. Do you know that the top 20% of the economic strata in our country spend more on food than the bottom 20% makes in disposable income? Think about that. More than they make. So that group at the bottom is the one I'm thinking about. They're currently enjoying the most affordable food supply in any developed country. I am not going to screw that up. As we look at changes to the Farm Bill, things that might be going on, I'm going to be asking myself, what does it do to the cost of food? What does it do to that single mom living paycheck to paycheck, maybe not even on food stamps, who's struggling to make ends meet, who uses that food budget to flex? Her house payment doesn't change, her rent doesn't change, her car payment doesn't change. If something unexpected comes up during the month, it comes out of a food budget, and that means she's got to flex with what the kids get to eat at the end of the month. I am not interested in making her job harder, period. That bottom 20% spends 34% of their disposable income on food. Put it in perspective. When we were arguing about the GMO labeling issue and people said we did it, did or did not need it, one of the estimates that I saw said it would, if we don't fix it, it would raise the cost of food to a family of four by $1,000 a year. Well, the folks in the upper half of the spectrum don't care, quite frankly, what food costs. You could put a couple of $1,000 on their food bill, they wouldn't bother. But those folks at the bottom, the average food stamp recipient gets $130 a month. So a family of four, that's $520. That process would have added $80 a month to the food bill to that family. She wouldn't have gotten any more food. It wouldn't have been any better. It's just a high-end label that somebody wanted. So we can't let those kinds of things happen. And that'll be the family that we've got to think about. And that's the group. It's beyond the SNAP group. because in that bottom 50%, folks are living paycheck to paycheck, and that's how we need to address this issue. We're going to be ready to do the farm bill as soon as we can. If it's the fourth quarter this year, the better, early into next year. We're going to get this work done. I need the commodity groups to get their work done. I think the policy committee is meeting this afternoon to decide on kind of the directions you would like to see the farm bill go. Great. If you've got ideas as to what you want to do, I need to know what it does and how you do it and how much it costs and where we're going to get the money for it. I got asked earlier in breakfast, can we get new money? It's going to be hard to do. I've got to have you supporting that new money if, in fact, that's what you want to have happen. But we've done 84 hearings the last 2 years. We've done two more this year. We're going to be ready. Subcommittee started this week on their individual work. Each of the subcommittees will do two hearings in March and April on the areas of jurisdiction for them. They'll then have May and June to do subcommittee chairman's prerogatives or ideas that they want to do to explore those to see if we have that happen. We'll do listening sessions rather than field hearings. Field hearings require cameras and Cecil B. DeMille-esque kind of stuff. It's way too expensive. So we're going to do listening sessions where we take as many members as we can get at any one point in time, go to an area, listen to not only the leaders of the producer groups in that area, but also the rank and file. People are living with this farm bill day in and day out. What's happening, what's working, what's not working. So we'll have that part ready. I'll know the number of those I can do in a week or so once I get the budget, once the folks give me from House Admin, give me the amount of money I'll have to make that happen. And so we'll have those around the country. We'll get those scheduled. And we're going to be ready to make this happen. Now, one of the complicating factors will be that Speaker Ryan has said he wants to do a full-out welfare reform in 2018. Because SNAP is maybe the biggest program in there, it will be a piece of that. There are some things about SNAP that we have to fix. Actually, we have to fix about all of our means-tested programs, and that's that welfare cap or the capping mechanism if you make up to a certain amount of money, then you qualify for your benefits, whether it's housing, food stamps, child care, whatever it might be. If you make a little bit more than that, then you lose the benefit. So what happens to folks who typically always work in their own best interest is that if they get a raise or more hours or whatever, if they lose more benefits, then that raise gets them. And so it kind of traps them there because they're going to work in their own best interest by trying to take care of their families. Well, we got to figure out a way to avoid the cliff and maybe feather it out. That fixes not just SNAP. It includes all of the other means-tested programs as well. And so I don't know yet how that will factor into what we're going to get done, but that's going to be a part of that as well. We've got some specific things that we know we need to fix. I've got a problem in cotton with the stacks program, just didn't work. Dairy has some things we have to get fixed in that regard. The ARC county payment variability thing that's between counties, that's a data issue. We've got to work on that and get that fixed. But we're going to be asking anybody for their ideas of what we need to do going forward. But again, if you're going to ask for something new, then you're going to have to help me figure out where we get the money to make that happen. We put out our budget letter this week to the Budget Committee asking for the same resources we got in 2014. I think that's as respectful as we need to be on the fact that we are a nation with headed toward $20 trillion in debt. And so making sure that we're respectful of that issue and the ongoing is the deal we are. But you look at the crop insurance cuts over the last several years, the work of the 14 Farm Bill, as they say, when you're asking for money, we gave it the office. Production agriculture has done its share. And we just need to hold what we've got and move forward down that road. I think we've got a great story to tell. As I mentioned earlier, we've got, whether it's the actual what it does with the affordable food supplies and or what it's done financially for the projections of the next 10 years, we've done it in that regard. Talk quickly about regulatory relief is on the table. We've already seen good action there. The president's worked off, working toward getting rid of WOTUS and all the other kinds of things. I think Scott Pruitt at EPA will start showing us exactly what he's going to be, how well he's going to help us out in that regard. And once the secretaries get in place, I think you'll see a move toward things that will make us all feel a lot better about how our federal government affects us day in and day out, the attitude they come at us with, and all those kind of things I think will get better as well. Tax reform is a big deal. Speaker Ryan is as driven to get that done by the 1st of August as I am on the Farm Bill. See how that goes. I'd ask you to keep your powder dry on the tax reform. We don't know the details yet. The language is still over joint tax. As those come out, then your CPAs and your other professionals will be able to do a projection for you to show you what you're at. Here's where you're on the old program. Here's where you're on the new program. And then you'll be able to make a full-out evaluation of it. But if you just cherry-pick pieces out of it then and get too worried about it at that point in time, it's just premature. And you may wind up being really worried. I don't take that off the table. But just make sure you've got all the facts before you get that way. And then trade, big deal, obviously. And I'm continuing to push on the administration. They've got to get their trade guys confirmed and make this forward. I talked to one of Mr. Trump's top economic guys the other day, and I said, look, you guys put out a TPP, except for rice and tobacco. Most of production agriculture thought that was a good deal. I'm looking forward to Mr. Trump's better deals because that'll be our floor for the trade negotiation. Our evaluation of the trade negotiations will be what we had at TPP. How soon can you get those unilateral deals going? How quickly can you make that happen? He didn't have an answer for that, but he did say something maybe feel just a modest bit better, and that is, you know, we've been focusing on imports as the big deal, the big issue with respect to our trade deals. We've suddenly discovered that exports have an impact on the trade deficit. And so I was like, let it go. And I used that line that you guys have used lots and lots of times. Obviously, if we don't sell it, then you just smell it, and we want to sell it. So we're getting that trade deal done. I want to thank you for letting me be here this morning. Let me close with something that's totally absolutely nothing to do with respect to production agriculture, but it's on my heart, and I need to share this with you. I'm reading a book that's got a pretty evocative title to it, and it has to do with our republic. When Benjamin Franklin finished up, he and his guys finished up the writing of the Constitution back 230 years ago. He emerged from that issue and was asked by a woman named Mrs. Powell, what have you wrought? What have you given us, a monarchy or a republic? And his answer to her is, Madam, a republic if you can keep it. If you can keep it. So for 230 years, somebody in this country has been keeping our republic. Well, guess what? It is our turn. We are now the keepers of the republic. John Adams wrote that only a religious and moral people can self-govern, that our form of governance is unsuitable for anybody else. If you look at our country today, I'm hard-pressed to argue that we're maintaining the moral high ground to be able to self-govern. We all sing God Bless America, and we mean it. And I'm going to ask you to never, ever hear that song sung again or hear somebody invoke God's blessings that you don't ask yourself two straightforward questions. The first question is, just what is going on in America that's blessable? I'm a CPA. What's the inventory of blessable things that happen in our country? Can God bless the killing of 57 million babies in 43 years? Can he bless the coursing of our society, the language we use, the stuff that comes out of Hollywood that we call entertainment, and the way we aggrandize and sometimes deify the people who put that on? Suzanne and I were in Washington the day after the inauguration in the Women's March. Terrific. It was great. Except there was a real taint, a real ugliness to it that really offended me. And that was the signs and the costumes that women were wearing that making reference to women's body parts in the most crude, crass, common way possible. You wouldn't want it said in a private conversation. It should never be said. But they've got these signs and they're wearing and they're carrying them as badges of honor. And I'm thinking, how did we get there? And think about the deterioration. Mark showed us his grandkids. Think about the deterioration of the family unit and the impact it has on the moral compasses of children. These and other things are going wrong in this country, and that's not a moral fabric that will survive. That's not something that we can sustain our democracy with. Those aren't the core values that built this country. So that leads us to the second question is, what do we do about it? Can we legislate that in D.C. or here in Austin, Texas? No. We do about it by what Benjamin Franklin said, you can keep it. Not we can keep it, you can keep it. So each one of us, that leads to the second question. What's my personal role? What's my personal responsibility to make that happen? Well, you do it by living a code. I live the Judeo-Christian model. Jesus Christ is my personal Savior, and I try to live his tenets every day. Some days I'm better at it than others. But you've got to live a code as well. You and your family, your community, your city. All of us have those concentric rings of influence where every single day we've got to stand up for what's right in this country. Stand up for the good. Stand up for those core values that sustain this republic for 230 years. It's clearly important for Americans to do that. I have 7 grandkids. And I want them to be able to live under a self-governing republic, and we're not headed in that direction. It's clearly important for future Americans, but let me finish by saying it's also important for the rest of the world. Over the last 100 years, I would argue that there's never been a country do as much good for the rest of the world and ask so little in return as the United States of America. Period. It was God, I believe, for me, it was our divine, God's divine mission for us as a people, these resources, work ethic, all those things we've done to defend liberty, protect freedom the way we have. Looking at the next 100 years, who's going to do it if we don't? Russia, China, radical Islam. So if we're not worthy of that mission, God won't give it to us. And I believe that's God's mission for us. But he can't use us to do it if we're not a blessable people. So what am I asking God to bless? What's my personal role starting right now? You're all thinking of something you need to stand up to. I live in Texas, Midland, Texas. It's the buckle of the Bible Belt. It's pretty easy for me to say these things back home. But those days are getting behind us. We'll begin to get criticism. You stand up against the things that are wrong. If you look at folks and say, I love you as a human being, but I can't abide what you're doing, you'll get pushback. It will come at a cost. Not the cost that Syrian Christians have, being crucified, beheaded, but at a cost. And are you willing to pay that price? Are you willing to pay that price to keep this republic? A republic, madam, if you can keep it. God bless each one of you. God bless Texas, and God bless the United States of America. Thank you all very much. Good to be with you. Appreciate it.